This is Poking Holes in Blinders. Here's a sneak peek into this week's episode. We are so excited to be joined by our special guest today, the legendary and all-around great guy, Mr. Doug Coleman.
I mean, look what we get to do. Oh my gosh. Every day you're on a set, it's just a wonderful experience.
Your brain just thinks differently. You are an incredibly creative person, and these ideas come to you very, very vividly and very clearly.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to this episode of Poking Holes in Blinders. I'm Colin Fallenweider, and with me as always is Dr. Brian Height. And we are so excited to be joined by our special guest today, the legendary and all-around great guy, Mr. Doug Coleman. Thank you so much for being here, Doug. Brian will do a little bit of an intro for you, and then we'll get to chatting. So take it away, Brian.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Doug. Both Colin and I are so tickled to be able to have this conversation. The breadth of what you've done in life is incredible, and it's just so fun. I don't even know where we're going to go with this. Part of what's going to make it fun as well is just sort of meandering through the life and brilliance of Doug Coleman. Just in case people don't know who Doug Coleman is, let's talk about a few things that Doug Coleman's done. Doug Coleman was in the Junior Olympics for trampoline back in the day. I don't know which day. We're not going to talk about that. But he was in the Junior Olympics for trampoline. Got a black belt in martial art of some kind. What kind of martial art did you get a black belt in, Doug?
In two disciplines, Kenpo and Chung Fa Kung Fu.
There you go. Black belt in not one, but two disciplines. He's an amazing skier. In fact, he taught freestyle skiers how to flip and was instrumental in the whole creation of freestyle skiing. Became a judge in that realm and actually was part of the committee that created the scoring format for the freestyle aerials and moguls, most of which I believe is still in place. He's a member of the Directors Guild, SAG, Television Academy, the World Acrobatic Society, which, by the way, put him in the Hall of Fame in 2005 for trampoline. So he's a World Acrobatic Society Hall of Famer. He's on Blue Ribbon Committee for the Taurus Awards. And this is the coolest part, I think. He's a member of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. He's a member of the Society of American Magicians, member of the Magic Castle. And I say that's the coolest part. We'll get into the magic stuff. But that's been a huge part of your life is the magic. But also worked in a ton of shows as a stuntman, stunt coordinator, second unit directors, worked in Casino, Heat, The Revenant, Sully, Red Notice, Westworld, Babylon, Peter Pan and Wendy, and a smaller show too that he turned me on to. I hadn't even heard of it, but it was amazing. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. He's worked with Steven Spielberg, Martin Scorsese, Robert Zemeckis, Clint Eastwood, Christopher Nolan, calls Harrison Ford a bud, probably Robert De Niro too, I believe. You guys are pretty tight as well. So the guy's been around. He's done so many things. He has an incredible talent, incredible skills. And, oh, I forgot the motorcycle part. So here's this. The guy's working on some show. I can't remember which show. You'll have to tell us which one. But decided he wanted to get to work faster, more efficiently, not deal with traffic. So he bought a beat-up Ninja Kawasaki. It had been laid down. He got it, picked it up. Never really rode motorcycles before. And then took that to racing Ducatis on the road circuit. Could have been sponsored. I mean, again, going from just the bottom, you know, just picking up some skis, putting them on, and then next thing you know, you're creating some new discipline in skiing to picking up some beat up motorcycle and racing at the top of the world. And that really leads me into my first question for you, Doug. It's just phenomenal how far you're able to take some of these skills in so many varied places. Like the motorcycle of just deciding that you were going to get into this thing, getting interested in it, and then taking it as far as you did. That seems to be a theme in your life, in your career. Is that fair to say? Is that something that you tend to do? You tend to get something in your hands and then you just want to continue on with it until you've mastered it?
First of all, I just want to say how grateful I am to be a part of this. I think what you guys are doing is just amazing. You are two of the most well-read guys I know in this industry. It's incredible what you're doing. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for allowing me to participate with this, because I am honored. What an introduction. How do you know all this stuff?
Hey, we did a little research. We had a couple moles that we had to, pay off.
It's crazy. Well, as you maybe can understand, I'm an adventure seeker. So that's really the bottom line of what my life has been. I love to to get absorbed in something and learn it to the capacity that I can and to the extent that my time will allow. And that's been my whole life.
But again, there are so many different things, and it takes so much time and effort and energy to get to any level of proficiency, but then to take it to actual mastery in the way that you have. How do you balance? Here's my question. How do you balance your desire for so many different things and to have your hands in so many different pies with the discipline that's required to actually get good at what it is that you're doing?
Well, it's anything. It's just dedication. You just don't sit around. You look at something, you go A to B. That's just what it's going to take to get to B. Like you said, it's a delicate balance of being able to do all the other things that are going on in your life. But when something interests me, I will make the time to dedicate the effort to make it the best I can make it.
I think that's pretty impressive. I had the same idea too, when we're looking through all of the things that you've accomplished and that you're part of. I'm like, how does he find the time to do this? I definitely get distracted pretty easily. But I think what I'm hearing from you is it's really just amount of dedication and focus. And if you're able to keep your dedication and keep your focus, then you're able to accomplish these things while still balancing out the tugs from life. If we can get into the magic part a little bit, because I don't know if the audience knows, but Brian is an amateur magician. I know him and you have kind of bonded over it. And he spoke briefly about there's a connection between magic and stunt work for you. And I would love for you to talk about that connection a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, what we do, I call it high risk illusion. I mean, look at the stuff that you were rigging on everywhere, everything at once, or what was that called?
Everything, everywhere, all at once.
That's the one. You know, an Academy Award nominated film, it won a bunch of stuff. You were rigging, I believe, on that. I'm not sure exactly what you did, but those are illusions. We're creating something that isn't really happening, and that's magic. Every film set is magical. Every department is doing something magic, whether it's the hair and makeup department, costumes, grips. I mean, every department is, we're performing magic and we're creating this illusion of the film for an audience.
So, Doug, let me back up just one second, because first you were talking about the film set being magic and each department being magic. How do you define magic? What is magic to you?
There's so many ways to describe magic. I call it illusion. What we do on film sets is illusion. And when I'm performing my magic shows, it's an illusion. I'm showing you something that didn't really happen. So it's an illusion. And we are involved in high-risk illusion with stunts.
That's a great correlation.
Yeah, it's one of the interesting things about when you define magic as illusion. That's one of the things that interests me about it as well. Is to me, it opens up larger questions of just life in general. For example, magic to me illustrates just how unique each of our perspectives is, because from your perspective, you see exactly what's going on, but that's not what I'm seeing. And we're both in the same space looking at the same thing, but just from different perspectives and different ways. And because of that, we have access to different information. And because of that, we draw different conclusions. And to me, that's incredibly interesting.
That's why I'm a magician. Yeah, I get it. That's why I'm a stunt coordinator. That's why I love our industry. I mean, the whole industry, as you know, our movie industry owes its whole existence to magicians. Brian, you and I have talked about how it was created. The first projector was a magician, the first projector. The first or the second movies, and the hundreds of them, were from a guy named Georges Méliès, who also invented special effects. He discovered editing by mistake. So movies came from magicians. That's where it all started.
That's amazing. I did not know that. I'd like to ask you a question about a thing that you had with Penn and Teller. I've heard a story peripherally, so I don't know if I have all the details, but I would love to hear that story from you. It was something they pulled you up on stage and the microphone and batteries. And is this something you're willing to talk about?
Oh, it's a boring story, but you really want to hear it?
I do want to hear it. Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, this is years ago. And a buddy of mine, a magician, we were up in Las Vegas and we like to gamble just to pay for the trip and to get perks. Right. So we spent about 45 minutes gambling and we got a lot of perks. So we figured, let's go see Penn and Teller. So we called up the Rio. They were booked solid. They were sold out. So, of course, we're going to go there and we're going to grease the guy's palm. And now we're sitting in the second row. Before the show starts, the announcer is saying, come on up on stage and examine this plexiglass box and this wooden box before the show starts. So, of course, we did, you know, and I know what to look for. My buddy kind of knew what to look for. My friend, Bob, he says, let's leave him a note. So we left a kind of an obscure note from Bob and Doug in the wooden box. And we sat back in our chairs. The show starts. They move the boxes off stage. They're doing their act. It's awesome. You know, I love Penn and Teller. And toward the end, I know that they're going to be doing this bullet catch where they shoot bullets through panes of glass and they catch it in their mouth, the bullet catch. I also know that they're going to want a couple of volunteers. So as Penn Jillette was walking out on the stage, I knew that he was going to be asking somebody to come up. So I was the first movement. My hand was going up before his words started coming out of his mouth. So he went right to me and I'm up on stage. Now I'm with Teller, the guy that doesn't talk. And he hands me this big industrial microphone. Then he hands me a 38 caliber pistol and a bullet. I had to draw a picture on the shell. I had to draw my initials on the bullet. I had to insert it in the gun and I hand it to him. I check the glass out to make sure that's all real glass. So now I'm standing back while they're going to be, they put on masks and some other stuff. They're going to shoot the bullets through the glass and catch them in their mouth. I was bored. I don't want to say I was bored. I'm just, this is how I am. I wanted to do something to entertain myself. The microphone, I tore it apart. I took the base off. I took the battery out, a spring, a mesh. I took everything that you could possibly take off and out of this microphone and had it in my pocket, standing in front of 2,000 people and no one saw, just for me. So now they shoot the bullets. They catch them in their mouth. I walk across the stage. Penn Jillette spits his bullet out in my hand. He says, is that your bullet? Not only does my mic not work anymore, but I'm miming. And Teller comes across, he grabs the mic, hits it on his leg, like, and then he realizes it's way too light. But they know how to get out of this. The audience is clapping. It's funny. It was just ridiculous how everything worked out. So now I go back to my seat. My buddy's looking at me like, what did you do? You know, he still doesn't know. People are patting me on the back. Oh, how timely for the microphone to go bad. That was hilarious and blah, blah, blah. So now the finale of the show, they bring the two boxes out on stage. The plexiglass box and the wooden box. Teller gets inside the wooden box. They put it in the plexiglass box. They close the curtain. They open it up and he's sitting on top of it. And he's got the note in his hand. I can see the little note in his hand. Now he's, and it's their finale. It's their end of the, you know, the end of the show. And they both walk out. I'm in the second row. So he's all of 10 feet away from me. And he looks down at me and he's got the note. And I went, yep. And my hand had all the parts to his microphone. And the look was, he could have killed me. But I have that in a frame. I wished I had it now, but it's all framed up. And I'm very proud of that day. Well,
thank you for sharing that story. I've heard it peripherally for years from Tom Williams, actually. I think he mentioned it to me first. And so I appreciate that. I finally know the true story and the real story. So,
and I think, Brian, you've seen that. You've seen the frame with all that, the components, haven't you?
Yes, I have. And I'll tell you what, one thing about that story that's interesting to me, and I want to highlight and bring it back to the stunt thing, is the part where you knew you wanted to get chosen and you knew how to get noticed. And the reason you knew how to get noticed is because you understood attention and how attention works, that just the things that draw our attention. That's a huge part of magic, but I have to believe that that's also something that you draw on as a stunt coordinator and second unit director too, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that you have to get your way. You know, you're working with different personalities and different directors and everything else, and you know what's right. And they are trying to do something that's not so right. So you have to, I hate to use the word manipulate.
How about guide? You could guide them.
Yes, there you go. So you have to guide them so they think that they are the ones that are coming up with the solutions to whatever it is. So that's been my forte for many, many years. But that's just working with everybody. You know, like I said earlier, when you're working with all the departments, you're all in it together. You're all there for the same cause. And I don't exclude anybody when I'm on a set. Everybody is a part of it. When I need to have the attention in my department, I make sure that I get it.
Even the same thing, like with the attention with the departments, yes, but even with your creation, so your choice of shot or your choice of blocking for certain scenes, does that same understanding of what drives attention benefit you in that setting as well?
When I'm directing second units and things like that, I'm usually being hired by directors that just say, go do your thing, which is really an honor and a privilege to be able to do that. It doesn't happen all the time. You'll get storyboards, you'll get, you know, previs, things that you put together, things like that, that you're going by. I'm not a big fan of doing that. I'd like to create things and share it with people and explain it to someone that is receptive. But when they're not, you have to kind of coax them into understanding what you're doing. Three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri was a case. I wanted to do a one-er. I didn't want to do a one-er. It just felt good to, it worked with the rhythm and the pacing and the characters and the story to do a one-er. The director said, no, he didn't want to do it. So I shot it with my iPhone, and it was a piece of business going from a police precinct across the street, cars skidding up into a building, second story, guy goes flying out of a window, and then he comes all the way back in the police precinct. It was up for Best Picture, by the way, and he won the Academy Award, this gentleman that was in the shot. When you watch it, it doesn't feel like a one-er, and I didn't want it to feel like that. It was shot in a way that was really just fit the characters, fit the pacing, fit the story. It didn't take you out of it. It made you more of a part of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. First of all, that's such a great, powerful movie. What a powerful movie. And I just happened to see that sequence that you were just talking about. I think Sam Rockwell is the police officer. Such a great emotional ride that you get, that you're walking with him. And then he throws the guy out the window and he falls down to the concrete. Then he comes back down. What a great way of telling that story. And you really do feel the raw emotion in it.
And the director was fighting it. He didn't really understand my concept of that shot until he saw it with the iPhone. And then he went, okay. And so we shot it. And I'm really proud of that sequence.
Like I said, great, great movie. I just wanted to say personally, like when I came into the business, I just loved working for you because of the way your attitude was, like your life philosophy and how to have fun with it, but how to stay professional. And I believe if you could work for someone like Doug Coleman for this career, then it'd be the best career ever. Like, why would you ever want to do something else?
Very kind words.
Well, thank you for the job. Brian had mentioned that you guys talked a little bit about the five phases of Doug Coleman, about your experience in the industry.
Oh, yeah. Let's start there. Like, what are the phases of Doug Coleman?
Well, it started out with, who's Doug Coleman? Get me Doug Coleman. Get me a cheaper Doug Coleman. Did I miss one?
Get me a younger Doug Coleman.
Yeah, younger Doug Coleman. Who's Doug Coleman? But I got to tell you, I'm 70 years old coming up in November. I'm working on a show right now with the interim agreement. So the phone keeps ringing, even at my age. So I feel very blessed and very honored to still be in this industry. I mean, look what we get to do. Oh, my gosh. Every day you're on a set, it's just a wonderful experience. And the traveling and meeting guys like you and being all over the world and, you know, from Indonesia to Turkey, it's mind-boggling to me that I'm still doing what I do. I love it.
Well, how did it happen? You started out, who's Doug Coleman? Nobody knows who you are. And then you get in and you start doing stunts and you move from there into coordinating. Is there a mindset or philosophy, way of being that you've kept throughout that you think has worked for you in order to help you progress through those various stages?
You know, I've never thought of it like that. I'm just kind of doing what I'm doing. What sparked the whole stunt thing for me, I was about 10 years old and I was in my parents' front yard with a buddy. We put ketchup on our lips and our chin and we were doing a fake fight and a car stopped. These guys ran out and broke us up. They were very upset. They pulled us apart. And then they got back in the car and, you know, I thought, man, I'm onto something. That was magical. That was an illusion. They thought we were actually doing it. We weren't. So that's, I think, where it started for me. As far as the philosophy goes of my journey and everything else, I just don't take no for an answer and had to infiltrate and work my way into the industry the best way I could. No one in the industry helped me along. And I'm kind of glad it happened that way. It's my own journey. I did it on my own until I really got going. Then everybody's helping me, you know, when you're working with a bunch of stunt people. I never really thought about the philosophy behind it or anything else. But it's just that was my goal. I wanted to do what I'm doing.
Would you say it's fair to say that you saw like a goal, like you're saying, and you just kind of headed in that direction as opposed to trying to plan it, organize it? You're like, I want to end up over there. Why don't I just start walking over there?
That's right. It's an adventure. My first day on a movie set, I was 14 years old. I hitchhiked with a buddy from Ogden, Utah to 20th Century Fox in Hollywood. 14 years old. Think about that. It's crazy. Our parents thought we were up camping in the Uinta Mountains up here in, you know, in Utah. We hitchhiked. We hopped a train. It was a full-on adventure. I stole the Haight-Ashbury sign, which I still have in San Francisco. We worked our way down to 20th Century Fox. That was my A to B. That was my target, 20th Century Fox. Went to the main gate. They wouldn't let us in, of course, you know, beat it. And we hit our backpack somewhere and climbed over a, we went down a side street, climbed over this big wrought iron fence and spent the day at 20th Century Fox. This is 3 days into our journey. We got there in 3 days from Ogden, Utah, hitchhiking. Snuck into all the sound stages, went up in the perms and just watched the process. It was fantastic. The next day, our parents were very upset because they realized that we were not camping. We were in California. They sent us bus tickets because there was only three days to get ready to go to high school. That was my adventure to make sure that I was doing what I wanted to do, which was be on movie sets.
Hopping a fence. What a great story.
Yeah, I think we've all hopped fences. Yeah, I don't think there are too many stunt people who've been around for a while that hadn't hopped a fence at one point or another. So, Doug, one of the things you said, I believe, is it is a philosophy. And I think it's part of a big part of who you are is you said you don't take no for an answer. You set your mind to doing something, and that's what gets done. And sometimes it gets done quick and sometimes it takes a while. But if you decide you're going to do it, then it ends up happening. But I also know that your way of thinking about that is, I don't think it's unique to you, but I think it's interesting. And the story that comes to mind is when you and I were at the Magic Castle, a day after you were talking about you needed a video of a magic thing so that you could get hired to do some magic stuff at a show. And we were at the Magic Castle and we were just sitting around hanging out talking to this guy. And next thing you know, what comes out of his mouth is, hey, if you need a video, like I know a guy, right? There it was. And now you had your video connection. And so that's the story that comes to mind in terms of taking this idea of not taking no for an answer, but the way you think about not taking no for an answer. It's not a belligerent thing. It's not a, I will take control of this situation and I will make it happen thing. You have a different approach. What is that?
Well, you know, it's just your thought process. You just want to think, this is what I want to do. And you think about it in a positive way and it kind of guides you there. You try not to put obstacles in that path. Does that make sense?
It does. Now we're going esoteric here, but I feel the universe affords us with all the opportunities any of us need. And if we're open to seeing those cues or opportunities, that they will continue to come in. Sometimes people are like, it was my once in a lifetime opportunity. And it's like, well, every opportunity is a once in a lifetime opportunity. As long as you keep being open to it. And like you said, putting out that positive vibe, say, hey, this is where I want to go. How do I get there? And then you will see the paths in front of you that you can choose to take.
Yeah, that's your intention. You know, once you have something that's your intention and you're looking at it in a positive way and you're trying to minimize any blockades that would stop that intention from happening, it tends to work.
And that's an interesting perspective of instead of take control of things and manipulate the variables, it's remove obstacles. You know, it's almost like an opposite thing. It's instead of reaching out, you just sort of remove. But, you know, I think too, the other thing that occurred to me while we're talking about this is I can tell you from the conversations we've had, and just you have to know because of the conversations like you had with the director of the Ebbinghaus, Missouri movie, your brain just thinks differently. You are an incredibly creative person, and these ideas come to you very, very vividly and very clearly. While you and I were at your house working through some magic, this isn't just an example. You were teaching me some tricks and you're like, do you get it? I'm like, no, I don't get it at all. I don't know what you're talking about. And I know that was incredibly frustrating at different points for you. And you're like, yeah, it was frustrating. But it's because you see it so clearly, these things in your mind. And your mind thinks outside the box just so easily and so naturally now at this point. I don't know if it always did. Maybe it did. But at this point, that's just how you think. And so this idea of staying open to opportunities combined with your ability to notice things that others just don't and connections that other people just don't see, I think probably serves you fairly well. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Or am I just missing the boat?
I don't really analyze myself like that. So if that's what's happening, that's, I guess that's okay. I just think the way I think, and we're all creative. The movie industry, as I know it, are full of the most creative people in the world and problem solvers. I mean, we can figure anything out. Any problem that comes up, we figure it out and make it work. So I don't really analyze myself in how I think and think outside the box, but people point that out to me, like you, Brian, you've said that a few times. I just think the way I think. Wrong or right, I don't know. You know, it works for me.
One of the things that I gravitate to is you were talking about problem solving. And that is one of the reasons I love this business or being part of this business, because it is all we do every day, all day. You get a script. There's a problem in the script. Okay, how are we going to solve that? Or you have it solved, and then you go to the set, and the set's built in a way that you can't do it how you plan. It's like, okay, we still have to accomplish the same thing. How are we going to solve this problem? So I love that aspect about our business, that all we're doing is problem solving. I also appreciate you brought up about the other departments. They're all doing the same thing. We all want to be problem solving departments. And so when that works together and we are able to support the other departments and they support us and we are able to accomplish this master illusion that we just created, this fake false story, but made it real and believable for the audience.
Yeah, we're pretty fortunate just working with all these creative people in every department. I feel so fortunate, as most of us should.
Doug, one thing that I want to ask you about too is you mentioned at one point to me that you'd had a conversation with a director. And one of the things that you hate is directors saying, let me show you an example of, I want it to be like this, that drives you crazy. Why does that drive you crazy?
It doesn't really drive me crazy. I just don't like that process. I don't use it. What you're saying is I've worked with a lot of directors and they'll show me footage of something and say, well, yeah, we want it to be like this. And I got to tell you, a lot of the times they show me stuff, it's my work. So that kind of makes me proud because I can say, yeah, I did that. But we're creative people. I don't want to do something that somebody else has done unless it is absolutely necessary for the characters and the story, rhythm and all, you know, all the different things that make a movie work. But if it can be done in a way that haven't ever seen before or even thought of, that's our job. That's my job, is to create stuff that I'm not thinking about right now. I mean, I've got some stuff coming up next week that I've never, ever done before. People are scratching their head. How are we going to do that? And so am I right now, but I know it's possible. I know it's possible and we're going to get it done. And I look at people's work and I've admired it, but it's always good for my brain to come up with something I haven't seen.
In order to create those illusions, be they in just regular magic or in film, there are certain tools and resources and things that you have to really understand in order to be able to do that at your best. In other words, if you don't understand editing at all, it's going to be very hard for you to create a scene. And then there, you know, if you don't understand special effects, or if you don't understand regular card magic, if you don't understand little sleights of what to do, then you can't create something new. So describe how you think about some of the tools and the learning of the different strategies that you need in order to create that vision.
I've spent my entire career as a sponge. Whenever I'm on a set, when I'm with whoever it is, the best special effects guys or whatever, I really try to learn from these guys. I went and got my powder card years and years ago. I don't keep it current. Powder card means that I can buy explosives. I can blow stuff up. I know what the Z-17 is. I wanted to learn all of that, not to be a special effects guy, but so I could utilize that in my work. And I try to do that with all the departments, just so you know that, wow, this is a possibility. I'm up here in Utah right now. This director showed me some footage of a guy jumping on the front of a car, a moving car, and it stops and he rolls off. You guys have seen that before, I'm sure, because I've seen it 100 times. So I recommended something else where he jumps on the front, but then he rotates and now he's hanging on the side window trying to reach in at this little girl. So knowing how special effects guys work, I'm putting receivers on the side of that car so I can have the guy stand safely to get all the interior shot, you know, things like that. I hope I'm making sense. I'm kind of rambling on about something I'm going to be doing up here. But yeah, just all those different things that we learn are part of my creative process. Let me talk about The Revenant. This is something that I knew about special effects, visual effects, and costumes. We were doing a bear fight. And I wanted to do it all in one. I wanted to do a 6-minute shot all with Leonardo. Everybody was saying, we're going to have to cut. We're going to have to edit because we have to go in. We have to tear the costume. We got to put the makeup on and all, you know, on his body. So I said to everybody, why don't we weak knee the back of the costume and have special effects makeup already have all that blood and those claw marks on his back. So we don't have to cut. And the guy that is performing as the bear can tear that open and expose all that. So they were like, well, we can't do that because they've never done it before. But we ended up doing that and it looked great. Those are the kind of things that I have to work with each department to explain a way that we can do it that's never been done before. That was one example. 3 billboards outside of Evan, Missouri. Colin, you just watched it recently, you said.
Yeah.
You know, when he walks up the stairs and slaps that guy, they said, well, we're going to have to cut because we're going to have to put makeup on him, right? No, we won't. He's going to have a sponge in his hand when he gets hit. Boom. He's going to put it on himself. So that's how we did that. So understanding those little things, just being a sponge and learning as much as I can with every department, I come up with little goofy things like that.
To me, it's like a language. You can't tell a story if you don't have words to do that with. Each of these different skills and pieces of knowledge that you pick up from special effects, from costumes, from grip, from whomever, each of that is like a word. It's what you can use to come together and put them together in unique ways to generate your story. The other thing that really I want to highlight too, and then maybe see we can move into the questions.
Sure.
Is this love of learning that you have. You've expressed it indirectly a couple times throughout this discussion, but you just expressed it very directly in the sense that you love being a sponge. You love being in these places and interacting with new people and being able to take in information that you didn't have before. Has that always been part of your personality? And how do you cultivate that?
I've never really looked at it any, but yes, I love learning every single day. Every single day, there's something new that's going to happen in my world, and I embrace it, and good or bad, mostly good, fortunately. But yeah, I love learning. Don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's one of the things that brought Colin and me together was this.
I want to know everything.
Yeah. You guys are so well read. And so, I mean, it's always. Anyway, go on. I'm sorry.
This is about you. If you got something to say, then you should say it. You embody lifelong learner. And I think that that's so important. I value it myself. I try to teach it to my daughter. Any of the foster kids that I had coming into my house, I tried to embody that in them too. I tried to emulate this idea that what we are isn't who we have to ultimately be. We are always developing. We are always changing. We are always growing. And it can go backwards. We can get worse, but we have the ability to get better. And by focusing our attention in those directions and really having the humility, that's another thing I hear in your stories, is having the humility to listen to other people, to ask the questions. Hey, I don't know what that is. Will you explain that to me? Now you get the information as opposed to, oh, I know everything. And I'm Doug Coleman. You know, I'm Doug Coleman. You know who I am. You don't tell me. I tell you. That's not the attitude that you take.
Okay.
I think that that's allowed you to soak in so much information and create relationships with people that, like you said, maybe even open up the doors to allow them to believe in and give you the chance to realize your vision in your way.
Sure. And one of the biggest thrills of my world is watching my family and watching other people excel in their craft. I've never been one to like, oh, I'm not going to show you that. And I have thought about that. I don't ever want to be that guy that does not share things that are good and bad. But watching people excel and come up from a suggestion, man, it just, I love it. I love that that feeling that I get when I'm seeing somebody that I express something to, and all of a sudden it's taking them in a really positive place, especially with my kids. I'm such a proud dad. Anyway, blah, blah, blah.
I love the perspective that you just have on life. And I love how you support us as stunt performers. I have another question of a story that I heard, and tell me if this is a true story or not. Stunt people were making a ruckus back at base camp, like throwing the football around or maybe being a little loud or trying to blow off some steam. And there was word that got back to you that they were doing this.
Well, that's happened quite a few times. It was on a movie called Master and Commander. I had 86 stunt people there in Rosarito 86 stunt people. That's a lot of stunt people to be hanging around doing stuff. The tall ship was way out there in the, you know, is this the story?
Yes, this is. This is.
Okay. Yeah. So in the parking lot, we had electric skateboards. We were throwing footballs. We were doing all that kind of stuff, which I embrace because I'm one of those guys. I'm to throw a pad on an electric skateboard. I lay on it. I'm having fun with these guys. Oh, now it's time for me to go out to the ship and work. So the line producer came over to me and he started yelling at me, what are these guys doing? Why are they having fun? All this. And I said, we are who we are. And by the way, see all those people that are out on the ship right now, all the riggers, all those stunt people that are up there keeping people safe. When they're done, they're going to be coming back here and doing the same thing these guys are doing. So go for yourself. I mean, it was kind of one of those. And he just turned around and walked away. Yeah, I do remember that story and I embrace it. And I will be the same way on anything that needs that.
Needs that perspective.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, we would love to open the floor up to some questions.
Oh, boy.
Those that are listening, please, you can turn your videos on. If you have a question, just raise your hand. Also, I will open up the chat if you wanted to type a question instead of ask it. Is there anything else you wanted to discuss?
No, not really. I mean, I'm just, like I said, I'm thrilled to be here. And if anybody has any questions about anything, I'm happy to answer it.
I have one question while Colin's doing all that. What's the magic trick that you're working on right now?
I'm working on a plunger that picks up cards. And it'll be on my next show, which is Wednesday night. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't. You have to show it to me one day. Looking forward to it.
Tom Williams has his hand up.
Oh, Tom Williams.
Screw that guy. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Tom.
What's up, Colin and Brian? How are y'all doing?
What's up, Tommy? Man?
I don't have so much a question as I just want to say something. So Doug, in his giving nature, he's given me many opportunities as he has many, many folks in this business. And one of the things I always took away that I still carry with me anytime I coordinate on a set is Doug's amazing ability to make higher ups feel safe and comfortable and happy. It's a great combo because you'll see someone that'll do one of the three or something like that. But Doug makes everyone feel comfortable. And then also, oftentimes with his magical abilities, makes everyone just happy and entertained and not thinking about the danger of things coming up. I've always appreciated that about you. I try and emulate that in my own career, and I love you for it.
I love you, Tom. Thank you for the kind words. Great seeing you.
We do have a question. This is for Doug. What are your top three favorite musicians? Magicians. Not musicians, magicians. Who are your top three favorite magicians?
My top three magicians, Brian Hight.
Setting the bar low, brother.
And by the way, Brian's going to be performing at a place called the White Rabbit in, where is it, Brian?
Santa Paula, California.
In Santa Paula, California. He's going to be performing there in January. He doesn't know it yet.
Yes. Woo.
Gosh, there's so many magicians out there. The best magicians in the world, no one would know their name because they're into it just for the art, not the commercialism of it all, not the commercial aspects whatsoever. But I love Penn and Teller. Gosh, that's a hard one. That's a hard one. I don't really have a top favorite.
Okay. Just a PS to that says the Three Billboards is one of my favorite films when it comes to filmmaking. You brought such an incredible invisible action factor to the magic of it. She just really appreciates your work on that. There's another question. This is for Doug and it says, what is a stunt of which Doug is most proud having performed and then also having coordinated?
Gosh, this isn't a cop-out, but the biggest thrill for me in the industry as far as stunts is the friendships and the traveling and to be all over the world and be with stunt communities in Bandung, Indonesia, and all those. That's a thrill for me is, you know, stunts, we all do stunts. We all fall downstairs, we get hit by cars, fall, blah, blah, blah. But what means the most to me about stunts is meeting all the stunt people throughout the whole world. I hope that answered the question.
That would be what you're most proud of then.
Yes.
You know what? See, it was funny because you made the mistake. You said musicians instead of magicians, but Doug is also a musician.
Why am I not surprised? Of course.
And he's self-taught, just like everything else. The guy can juggle. He says he can shoot pool. I haven't tested that one out yet. We'll have to do that one day. But he's got these musician instruments around his house. He just sits down and plays. So, Doug, tell me a little bit about that. Like, again, this is just one of those things. You just decide one day that the bass is what you wanted to learn how to play. Like, how did that even happen?
Well, I was inspired by the Beatles. Some of you probably remember the Beatles.
I've heard of them.
Read about them in history. Yeah,
right. So I'm on the Ed Sullivan Show. I picked up a broom, dyed a mop black and put it on my hair. I mean, it was crazy. They were my inspiration. And that Christmas, I got a guitar. That's all I wanted was a guitar. We didn't have money to send me to take lessons or anything else. Things just clicked. And I've been a big fan of music all my life since I was a little kid. But that was the inspiration, were the Beatles. I'm looking at a violin right over there. Russell Crowe and I on Master and Commander were learning how to play the violin together. I never played. Did a movie last year, 2 years ago, Babylon, this crazy, way too long of a movie. But there was a big stand-up bass that we were using in the orchestra, and it got damaged a little bit. We were throwing stunt people into the orchestra, and I ended up with that. So now I play that on a regular basis, and it's just, I'm having a blast. It's just a matter of entertaining myself, and it's a passion, music.
Okay. There is a question. It says, who were your mentors in the stunt business?
Oh, boy. Well, I got my SAG card from a guy named Lauren James. I was doing flips on skis and everything else. He wasn't really a mentor, but man, I'm so grateful that he allowed me to get in the business. He was my open door to get a SAG card. It took me 2 years to get a SAG card once I found out what it was. Mentors, everybody. I mean, there's not one that sticks out. It's about seeing people on the sets and about, you know, watching people work. I don't really have mentors in that regard. That probably sounds like a cop out, but
I don't think it is. But just from our conversations, what I would say is you gravitate to whoever's in front of you. There's a quote by Bill Nye that says, everyone you meet knows something you do not. And I feel like since your perspective is that you're like, hey, this person knows something I don't. This person knows something. So it's not like you're drawn to one specific person. You're drawn to everyone. And you're not going to limit yourself by, well, I don't want to learn from that person. And that's like, just openly, yeah, feed me.
Yeah. And my early career, there was a lot of things that I was watching that I thought, man, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to behave like that. There's much safer ways to do things. And I just kept my brain kind of going in that direction. So I learned, I hate to say from other people's mistakes, or not really mistakes, but I just thought there was better ways to do things. So I pursued that.
This will lead into our next question, actually. This is for the three of us, but we'll probably start with Doug. What are some things you deem necessary for stunt people to learn in order to be the best they can be? Now, it could be both mentally and physical.
We'll talk about the physical aspects of it. Train, 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 learn everything. Don't be a one trick pony. There's guys that just want to drive and want to do car stuff. That's okay. But if you want to be a full blown stunt person, try to learn every aspect of it. If you're doing parkour, if you're doing all that stuff, that's good for certain movies, but there's a whole other aspect of filmmaking that goes on with ability. So learn, gosh, as many things as you possibly can physically. Learn all the rules and regulations of your industry. Make sure that you understand how all the SAG contracts work. You know, really look into all that. Make sure that on your phone, if somebody calls you, hi, Liza. Oh my God, my wife, we just finished a 7-day rally, just popped up. Sorry, everybody.
Hi.
Hi. Oh my God, it's so great to see you.
Great to see you.
I was telling everybody about your race, your 7-day race from, what a thrill to see you right now. She just raced from Mammoth to Mexico, 6 days, a compass and a map and no cell phones. And look at you. You look great.
Thanks. I'm a little dirty. It was all off road. I didn't die.
Yay.
Yeah. Again, with the low bar, you know what I'm saying? Doug was telling us about it earlier. Sounds like you did a whole lot better than just not dying. Sounds like you did pretty darn well. Did you have a good time?
Yeah, it was really hard in a very testing kind of way. It was fun, but incredible scenery, some really challenging driving. and obviously really challenging navigation. My navigator was in a pressure cooker for a lot of the time. Each day is 10 or 11 hours, and you're really pushing to collect those points. It's not a race for speed. It's a competition for points. And we have a map, a topo map, and a compass. And we get a list of usually around 30 to 40 waypoints. Some of them are marked with flags and some of them are not. You've just got to figure it out.
Well, that sounds awesome.
How did you know I was doing this, Liza?
Oh, you know, word gets around.
Yeah. I love you.
I love you too. Back to you. This isn't about me.
No. Yeah. So when I was seven, no, I'm
I may have heard that story.
Yeah, I'm sure you have.
So Doug, what else? Because I think that is a great question to ask, you know, and you were talking about the physical and talking about the different things to learn. What are the other things that you would recommend that stunt people learn, like how to think about that in order to be successful?
And you could go as simple as making sure that on your cell phone, you have all your contact and contract information and your sizes. So when a stunt coordinator calls you, you can say, yeah, it'll be right there. And you push the button and it's there, because there's a lot of stunt coordinators. They're very, very busy. And when somebody responds that way, that means, oh, that he's got it together. So that's one-on-one in my book. But again, it's all about training and learn every aspect that you can about the craft. If you can shoot stuff and do previses and edit it, then you're going to understand how things work. I recommend that people study acting, because we're performers. We're not just stunt people. We are performers. And you really, really want to understand a performance. And when you walk onto a set and you get that the flow of this action is, there's a reason that it's happening this way, it's just going to make you a better performer if you understand that. I hope I'm making sense. I'm just so stoked to see my wife.
It makes a lot of sense. I agree with you that as stunt people, we are storytellers. So whether we're standing in the scene before our stunt happens, or we're in the middle of that stunt or middle of the scene, we have to carry that acting side of it throughout the performance, because that's our job.
Absolutely.
Hey, C, can you repeat the question one more time?
That one was, what are some things you deem necessary for stunt people to learn in order to be the best they can be, physical and mental?
What comes to my mind when I think about that, there are six different categories when I'm working with my clients, whether they be athletes or business people or performers or whomever, that I think are probably pretty useful for everybody in whatever context. And those are physical, technical, tactical, mental, emotional, social. So what I mean by that is the physical Doug went through, you know, you train, you keep yourself in shape, you eat right, you stretch, you get sleep. The technical is that kind of gets in line with what Doug was talking about too. Like, how do films work? How do the scenes work? How does the editing work? How do these different departments come together? The tactical is think strategic with that. So what's the strategic approach? It can be long-term in terms of your career. How are you going to progress from where you are to where you want to be? It can be strategic in terms of a show. How are you going to maintain energy throughout, or how are you going to approach a certain gag? And then there's the mental, emotional, social. And I don't know that as many people focus on those, but they're really important. So the mental piece is, where's your mind? What are you saying to yourself? How are you talking to yourself? What's your perspective? How are you choosing to understand what's happening and going on in your world? That's a huge piece, because it's going to bleed over into the emotional piece of, are you frustrated? Are you irritated? Or can you be calm and at peace and happy and enjoying what it is that's going on? And then lastly, like Doug said earlier too, and really emphasized and highlighted it in a beautiful way, is that social part. This is a social business. We work with other people. We're not on set by ourselves. We're not doing our own thing in terms of setting ourselves up for success. If you don't have them, develop the social skills, because you're going to be broke if you don't. It's a social business. You have to be able to deal with other people, and you have to be able to create and manage and foster relationships with others. To me, those are the six categories that I think about, not only this business, but other areas too, and really analyze things through: physical, technical, tactical, or strategic, mental, emotional, social.
Nailed it.
There it is. I think we should kind of start looking at wrapping this up. There was one more in-depth question for Doug. And then there was also a question like, what is one of your favorite pranks that you played on set? Because I know you're a big prankster. But before that, we got a message finding mentorship as a woman in the business has been frustrating. And she was wondering, do you have any advice that would help women find mentorships within the business?
I'm not sure how to answer that, how to find it. I mean, if you see or hear about somebody that you want to be involved with, just pursue it. If somebody wants help from me, they come to me and I'm going to help them. That's a hard one to answer. Everybody has their own approach to people to get information. So I don't know how to answer that for her as far as finding somebody.
One of the things with that, Doug, I've found it in other fields too, is sometimes I think people will be hesitant to even ask. So for example, if somebody wanted you to mentor them or to ask you for advice and to really kind of embrace that, they might be intimidated and think, oh, he's Doug Coleman. I can't call that guy. I can't email that guy. He's never going to get back to me. I'm just me and he's him. I mean, what do you think about that mindset and how to overcome it?
I understand that. I understand that it's intimidating to do that, but you just got to get beyond that. If your goal is to be mentored by somebody, make it happen.
Also, Tom is part of like national boards of SAG-AFTRA, and he just wrote that the official SAG-AFTRA mentorship program should be going into effect soon, hopefully by 2024. So this is something SAG has been working on for quite a while with a bunch of stunt professionals and really trying to help develop a mentorship program. If that's something you're interested in, once that mentorship comes out, sign up for the program. That's going to be a great resource.
Yeah. And the other thing too, though, see, that I want to put out with that, because I think this is important, is yes, to what Doug said, you know, just get over it, man. Just, you're going to have to get past the intimidation and the discomfort. But what's going to happen likely on the other side is you're going to be surprised, because the stunt business is filled with amazing people. They truly are. And if it's somebody that you want to be mentored by in the first place, that person's going to respond to you. Now, that response might be, no, I don't have time, I'm sorry, but you're going to hear something back. And it's not going to be, what are you, out of your mind? Like, why are you wasting my time with this crap? It's not going to be that. Put it out there. Ask the question. You will get a response and it might surprise you.
We should start wrapping this up. And so I'd love to hear if you were able to think of like your favorite prank or joke on set. And then we'll close this thing out.
You know, there's like 300 that are in my brain right now. Oh boy. Okay, so we're doing The Perfect Storm. My family buys me a bicycle, a set bike, a studio bike, just to ride around. Had a plaque made, second unit director, stunt coordinator on it with my name, and very proud Schwinn set bike. I'm riding around. George Clooney wants to borrow it. George Clooney's another practical joker. I love him. And I would loan it out to these people. Well, one day, Sean Graham, stunt guy, said, I want to borrow your bike. So he takes it and somebody radios me. I'm down on the set. Doug, you need to come outside right away. Something happened to Sean on your bike. I walk outside. Sean is now walking between the two sound stages with two pieces of metal, which used to be my bike. My bike that my family gave me about a month earlier. George Clooney's there. All these people are there. And I'm looking at this and has this story about somebody ran over your bike and they backed over it again. I'm looking at the bike. It's in two pieces. It is mangled. There's nothing salvageable on it whatsoever. About a week earlier, a friend of mine, Mickey Giacomazzi, did a little wheelie and he scraped the back fender. That was the only thing wrong with my bike. I'm looking at this mangled stuff. I look at the back fender right there where it was still pristine. Everything else was mangled. So I knew, oh my gosh, they went to a great length to do this prank. And of course, George Clooney now rides the bike around from another position, my real bike.
They gotcha.
Well, they got me to a point until I saw that it wasn't really my bike. What a thrill that was. I have a picture of it right over there. Anyway, that's a story.
You know what's awesome? I have never heard that story from you. But I've heard that story before.
Have you?
Yes. I love the fact that we haven't spent a lot of time together, but your stories are legendary. Thank you again so much for coming on our podcast. I love your perspective and all the things that you have accomplished. It's super inspiring and just humble as a person. I just love our time together. So thank you so much, Doug.
Thank you so much, Doug. Hopefully we'll see you soon.
Thank you all. What a pleasure.
All right. Well, thank you, the rest of you, for being here. Really appreciate you spending your Sunday with us. And also thank you so much for the questions. I think that's it, Brian. We call this thing good.
Yeah, that's it. And if you haven't checked out the other episodes, check those out too. We're on iTunes. We're on Spotify. We're in a lot of places that I'm forgetting now. But check out the podcast. Click sign up or like or register.
Whatever
it is you click. But yeah, thank you very much for your time, everybody.
Remember, knowledge infused with compassion fuels better decisions. Later!